Cleveland.
There's more than just Cleveland. Thank you. Thank you so much. I would like to thank the Roundup Board. I want to thank the Roundup Board for including Al-Anon. Our program tells us that we've been affected by someone else's drinking. So I do want to thank you for having Al-Anon as part of your weekend. I kind of want to thank Scott for asking me. I'm not really sure. I could have signed up for a root canal, and I probably would have liked that better. But I will thank Scott, and I definitely want to thank Andrew for the introduction. My name is Wanda. I am a very grateful recovering member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon. And Al-Anon says Al-Anon AFG. It is Al-Anon Family Groups. And we are a family. We are a family of people who practice the 12 steps, the same as the people in AA do. But we're also a family of people that have helped each other. Last night they mentioned the passing of Bo and Shirley. And the very first time that I was asked to share, it was Bo T that asked me to come to the Bessemer anniversary. But years ago when I went to Sumatonga with Kitty, who is such a big part of my story, I had the opportunity to hear Bob and Juanita. And I said, I don't know how you can be so honest and share. Juanita said, Wanda, one day you will share. Juanita gave me this handkerchief. I had no idea you would be here, Bob, but I knew that I wanted to have this in my hand when I share. I have not always been honest, and listening to Al-Anons get up and share from their heart, from their stories, has helped me so much in my recovery. And so I like to keep this. I noticed that the program says an orderly withdrawal from the routine of everyday life. And if anything, my life was disorderly before I came into this program. And anyway, in Al-Anon, they say we share experience, strength, and hope. So this is an Al-Anon meeting. I am sharing, and I'm the only one sharing for that. So it will be that meeting of just me sharing. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. My parents were from out west. My dad was born and raised in Houston, Texas. At that time, it was Harris County, because my dad was born in 1910. They moved to Oklahoma, and there he met my mother, whose parents were from Louisiana. And so the fact that I have changed and moved and have been that gypsy, I think I came by that honest. After World War II, my dad moved to Detroit, Michigan with a few of his brothers and one of his sisters. My dad retired from Ford Motor Company. I was educated in the Catholic school system of the Archdiocese of Detroit. I grew up at a time when music was a big thing in Detroit. I'm still a fan of the Detroit Tigers, even though they never seem to pull themselves out of the pit, but I have an old English D on the back of my car because that's my team. I went to Michigan State University, so I seem to have teams that aren't always doing the best, but I have a loyalty. As you will hear from my story, I seem to gravitate to underdogs. I was raised our family life was very good. My parents stayed together until my dad passed away. And my parents were married over 30 years. I am the second child of four. I had an older sister. She passed away 2 years ago, and I'm second. I have two younger brothers. My dad being a member of the UAW, he would have, you know, there were guys that would come over sometime to visit. I never saw my father intoxicated, but I do remember a time when someone came over to our house, and I was a little girl, and I remember this person must have gotten drunk because my dad had taken him and physically made him leave the house. And I, when you see things like that, I guess it says, you know, that kind of behavior must mean that there's consequences for it, although I never seem to have the let the consequences go with it. My mother, when I was very young, my mother had tuberculosis. And so at that time, they were sent to what was called a fresh air farm. And so my dad had some people come in and stay in the house with us so that he could go to work. And these people took care of us. But that meant that for maybe from like 4, 5, 6 years old, maybe 7, I'm going to say there were probably 3 to 4 years of my young life when I did not have my mother in the house. And when I look back now, I see where one of those M's of Al-Anon, the mothering, became a part of who I became. When mother got back, we like to tease, the fourth baby is 9 years younger than me, 13 years younger than my older sister, so I think my dad was very happy to have mother back in the house, and our baby brother was born, and that was my first mothering. I love taking care of my little brother. We are very close. I took him to see Jimi Hendrix, and my brother became a musician. Scott and I like to tease because we have lots of musical interests in common. Just in case you want to know, I was born in 1948. I mean, I just turned 71 years old. And Irene and I were talking because every morning that I get up, I'm grateful. It's not good God, it's morning. It's like, oh, thank you, God. I made it through another day. Anyway, so I went to Michigan State. Oh, let me, one other thing. One of my dad's brothers, all of his brothers worked for one of the car plants or one of the suppliers for the car plants. And my dad's youngest brother was tall, he was good looking, he drove a Cadillac, and he kept a cooler in the back of his car. And I think that I fell in love with my first alcoholic with that uncle. My dad was a very responsible, he was hardworking, he was a very loving person. He was no nonsense, though, but my uncle just had this attitude that was so different from my dad. And I know when I look back that my uncle was my first alcoholic love. And he was very close to me. I mean, one time when I came home for the weekend, my uncle and aunt drove me back to East Lansing, you know, so we had a very good relationship. While I was at Michigan State, I met my first he. And I didn't realize that growing up with the mindset that I did said that God loved good girls. That's what I heard from the nuns for 12 years of my life. And my whole thing was to be a good girl. I put other people's needs and interests ahead of my own because I wanted to be considered a good girl. I met this young man, and he was a friend of one of my friends at Michigan State, and this guy lived in New York. And so my friend that I went to school with, his sister lived in New York. A bunch of us had gone to New York for the weekend, and we just all fell in love with the place, but I decided I wanted to go back and stay. So my friend invited me to come and stay in New York with her. I went there in 68. The summer of 69, I was still working in Manhattan. And one of the young ladies that I worked with said, Wanda, she said, I know how much you love music. She said, they're having this big concert up in upstate New York, and you might want to go. And I can still remember looking at her saying, you know, it's going to rain. We're going to get caught in all this. We don't need to go. And so I'm not going to go. She went, and I didn't go. And so I missed the opportunity to be part of the Woodstock Nation. And my son gets, he says, Mom, he said, I could have told my friends that you went to Woodstock. And I told Scott last night, I said, the whole deal was, you know, they made a movie of Woodstock, and there were all these young folks dancing around in the mud. And I said, yeah, you could have gone to see the movie, and you would have gone, oh, there's my mom dancing in the mud. And I could have said, yeah, but your mom was looking pretty hot back then, too. So you could say that about your mom. But anyway, so I didn't go to Woodstock. But one of the things that I did do was I got pregnant. And, you know, when I first came into Al-Anon and I would hear, you know, people share, I thought, you know, that's my secret. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to know about this. I've got to keep this quiet. But now that I've been here, I realize how much a part of all our stories, our secrets that we've been able to share and we've been able to make peace with. Well, I didn't tell anybody. And being the music fan that I was, I used to catch the A train to the Apollo Theater. And my second brother was in the Army, and he was stationed at Fort Dix, New Jersey. So my brother says, hey, I want to come over and visit you for the weekend. So I'm waiting at the train station. We're going to go to the Apollo. And I don't remember the exact lineup, but among other people that were there was Stevie Wonder. My brother gets off I'm standing there waiting for him, and the doors open to the train, and my brother walks, and he looks at me, and I'm like, because I'm pregnant. He walks, so we go to the show. My daughter, who has since seen and met Stevie Wonder, it's crazy. She was just going back and forth to this music. So yeah, she actually got to meet him, and she says, my mom was pregnant with me when I first heard you. Anyway, my brother told my dad, and my dad called me and said, you need to come home. My dad was a very hardworking, respectable man. I think I told you that. And I have heard the story of the prodigal son so many times. When my dad said, come home, he was talking to his prodigal because he was so proud of the fact that I had gone to college, something that he had never done. My dad had a fifth grade education and he loved to read. And when he said for me to come home, I never thought about how that was affecting him. I thought about Wanda. I thought people are going to know. Before I came into this program, I was judgmental. I was very self-righteous. I had seen a girl on our street who had become pregnant, and she was a teenager. And I really thought that that was just the worst thing. In my mind, you know, I had already condemned her. And what I have learned through the steps of recovery in this program is that all of the things that I looked at other people and pointed their fingers at, I eventually became that person. So I did come home. My daughter was born, and she has been such a blessing. I started to work. I thought my mother was going to babysit for me. My mother said, I did not have that baby. You get a babysitter. My mother made me responsible, that the consequences of my action I would take responsibility for. So one of our neighbors had a little daycare that she had, and my daughter stayed with her while I worked. I needed to fix Wanda. Wanda did not look like I wanted her to look. I needed to make Wanda look better. There was a young man that used to live down the street from us, and I did not marry the person that was the father of my child because I didn't want to get married because I had to. Some of the things that went on in my mind that I see now as so insane make I've been able to put them in perspective and make peace with them. But I wouldn't marry this person because I didn't want to have to get married. So I did come home and I was working. And there was a young man that lived down the street from us who would come to Detroit and visit his family. He was from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Well, he had been drafted into the Army, and this young man went to Vietnam. He got out of Vietnam, and he came back to Detroit because he had been drafted from Detroit. And he came, and he was looking for something to make his life whole. I knew this young man because we had been friends from when he would come and visit as kids. So I had known him. I knew his aunt and his uncle that he lived with. But somehow, those two children needed to heal something or make something whole, and we connected, and we got married. He got out of Vietnam in October, and we got married in January. He wanted to move back to Tuscaloosa. So I had a chance to start over. I had never been south. I was able to reinvent one. We were married, there was a baby, we were a family. My little girl was a year old when we got married. And I was able to start over. What I did not know about the young men who served in Vietnam was something called PTSD. His adjustment meant coming back to a family situation that he had already been at odds with when he was in Detroit. I had no idea of that. He drank a lot. That was the way I looked at it. He drank a lot. And he had a lot of anger. And that anger needed a target. And so I became that target. It was a very difficult time. One thing that I have learned about the people that I have married, because I have done this more than once, is that I did love the people that I married, but I was not able to fix them. I thought that if we had a baby, maybe that would make things better. So we had a baby, I had a son, and I thought, now we've got our perfect family. Unfortunately, my husband's mother, who was living in White Plains, New York, had a nervous breakdown, and she wanted her son to come and get her. I live with an alcoholic, abusive husband, two young children, and now a mother who is extremely mentally disturbed. And she and her son would fight in our home. He drank beer. And for those of you who can remember Colt 45, every morning, that was breakfast. Good old Colt. Do they even make Colt 45 anymore? They do. I don't look for it. I don't know. And so that was, yes. And so that was my home life. I really did the best I could with what I knew at the time. And I tried to take care of my family the best I could at the time. I needed to work. Money was not necessarily at a minimum, because he wound up working he got a job at a factory in Tuscaloosa. It was B.F. Goodrich, and he wound up working at the B.F. Goodrich plant because a friend helped him. His dad had owned some business, but he and his dad were at odds, as I said before, and so they were not able to work together, and so he wound up getting a factory job. And I was able to get a job at the University of Alabama and met some good people, and I think that for me, that was what I needed to get out of the house. But anyway, one of our neighbors, who was an attorney in town, knew what was going on in our home. If there's anything that I have learned in this program, is that people see the truth about our lives before we see it. and they knew that there was a problem in the house, and I did not know. My next door neighbor had been, her mother had been a member of one of the Al-Anon groups, or it helped support Bernice Washington, was my next door neighbor's mother. And Bernice said, you know, Wanda, I wished I told you about Al-Anon, but I probably would not have been ready for it back then. This young man that was an attorney, and he became my son's godfather, I saw him one time when I was out, and he said, you know, Wanda, we can help your children if you can help yourself. And what he meant was that the legal system says you can get child support if you divorce this guy. And so what I heard was, I need to do something. And so what I did was I got a divorce. We had been married 8 years, and so I got my first divorce. I never thought I would be a divorcee, or divorcee. I never thought that would be, but now I'm one more thing. I'm one more thing, like everyone else that doesn't want to talk about it. I am one more thing. So I got a divorce, and I will say that, kind of like the speaker's mom last night, when she divorced that alcoholic, we got to keep this family looking good. Let me see if I can replace this person with somebody else. And so I dated not wisely and not well. About 10 years, I had been divorced about 10 years. And some of my friends from church introduced me to this young man. Now, when your friends from church introduce you to somebody, you know it's from God. So I meet this guy, and he was originally from Florida, and he had moved to New York with one of the supply plants for General Motors, and so he was working at this plant, and he was a lot of fun. We went to go see Whitney Houston and somebody else in Birmingham. He liked music. But one of the things that I wanted to not look at was he liked to roll his own cigarettes, and he liked to drink, but I had never seen him drunk. And I thought, well, I'm a child of the 60s. I'm not going to worry about this stuff. So I tended to push this stuff away. And I had two of the things that I'd asked for was, God, if you're going to send me somebody, he needs to be married and he has to have had children. I checked off both those because he had been married before and he did have kids. So I wanted someone who understood what fatherhood was. I will say that he was a really good dad to my kids, but he was not the husband that Wanda wanted. When he chose to drink and do whatever he did, he would stay away from home. So he wouldn't come home, but he would go to work, and then he would come back home and he would be sober. So the friends that he had, I did not know about, but the life that we had when we were together looked good. Unfortunately, he was injured in an accident. A piece of equipment, he was a foreman, and a piece of equipment at his job fell, and in him trying to do whatever he could to keep this equipment from breaking, he injured his back. Now, in the 90s, if you had surgery for something that was very painful, what they prescribed was oxycodone. So this young man had an addictive personality, and they put him on oxys. And he was not able to work because he was injured on the job. So he was out of the plant on disability, and by him not being at work, and by that time, I was no longer at the University of Alabama. I was working with the criminal prosecution office in Tuscaloosa. By him not being able to go to work, he would be at home, and people would come to the house unbeknownst to me. They knew he had what they needed, and so people would come to the house. I got a call one time when I was at work, and it was my credit union, and the credit union said, we just wanted you to know that your husband has been coming to the credit union and he's taking money out of your account. So now I'm having to scramble because I've got to keep this together to keep my finances in order. So I had to take all the money out of my account, open another account. I had not really confronted him yet, and I had not gotten into Al-Anon, but what I would do is I would call my sister-in-law, and my brother had married a lady in AA. He had started going to AA, the same brother that ratted me out to our dad. Had joined the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew that there was a problem with alcohol and something else, and I would talk to my sister-in-law. And my sister-in-law said, you need to go to Al-Anon. One Sunday, it was an Easter Sunday as a matter of fact, I had invited a young man from our office to come have Easter dinner with us, and that was Eddie. And Eddie sits at the table with me and my kids, and he says, the next day when I go to work, he says, Wanda, have you ever thought about going to Al-Anon? Eddie saw something there that I did not want to admit. He says, I have a friend that goes to Al-Anon, and her name is Kitty, and you might want to give Kitty a call. I thought, okay, you know, I'll get to that later. I just need to talk to my sister-in-law right now. But as time went on, I realized that I needed help. I had gotten a part-time job, so I'm working a full-time job and a part-time job. I have a husband, kids, and one other thing that had entered into this picture during the time that I had been trying to find a second husband was I neglected to pay attention to what was going on with my kids. And my daughter became pregnant, and she had a little girl. So I remember that because when Eddie came to the house, my granddaughter was also part of that picture. And so anyway, I was working this part-time job, and Kitty came in the store. It was a department store called Gafers. And Kitty came in, and I said something to her, maybe about Eddie, I don't remember exactly. But just in the course of talking to her, I got a sense that this was somebody that I needed to get to know better, and maybe there was something that she could do to help me. And I called Kitty, and Kitty took me to my first Al-Anon meeting. I went to Al-Anon for about 6 months. It was in a clubhouse. There were older people in that room. There were people that did not look like me in that room, and there were people that were talking about things that I could not relate to at that time. And so I stopped going. I stayed away for about 6 months. When I came back, it was in May of 1994, and I'm grateful to say that I have been in this program for the last 25 years, and I've never looked back. For those of you who are in Al-Anon, who are thinking about going to Al-Anon, I share a story because my story is a story of hope, my story is a story of healing, but my story at that time was not a story of doing the work. I asked someone in our group if she would be my sponsor, and she said no. And what I heard was rejection. I don't know why I never asked you to be my sponsor. I think I had put you on a pedestal, Kitty. And so I never asked Kitty, and she was right. I probably would have had a better, my story would have been shorter if I had. But I didn't ask her. And so what I heard was rejection. And so it was 10 years in Al-Anon before I got a sponsor and I worked the steps. Our finances at the time were getting worse. We got notification that they were gonna foreclose on our house. Because I worked in the legal environment, I had lots of attorneys that were friends. And I had someone that said to me, Wanda, I can help you save your house, but you have to file bankruptcy. Let's see now, I've added one more thing to my list. I filed bankruptcy. So we were able to save our house. And I can remember asking God, because now I'm starting to have a relationship with God. The God that I had is that 12 years of Catholic school told me about what good girls got. And already, I've already gone over to the bad girl. I actually have that book, Bad Girls of the Bible. Yeah, when you said that last night, I'm like, I got that book. I'm starting to get a sense of a God that's going to help me. When I came into Al-Anon, I remember somebody saying, do you have a God of your understanding? And I did not. And I became a seeker because I wanted to know who this God was. Before we filed bankruptcy, I remember saying, if you are God, help us save this house. And then my lawyer friend says, I can help you save your house, but you have to file bankruptcy. I was thinking God was going to send some money. And it was good. But you know, God doesn't work like that. But there's things that are there that can help us. And so we filed bankruptcy. Unfortunately, this man's addiction was much worse than I thought. I had friends in law enforcement. They said, Wanda, we've been watching your house. There's some shady characters coming in and out. And you might, you know, at some point, I knew that I was going to have to take an action. I'm good at action. I haven't gotten to the awareness, to the acceptance, but I'm aware. I wasn't accepting my situation, but I was aware of it, so I jumped over to the action. And so by then, my children were grown and gone. They were old enough where my son was living out on his own. My daughter, she had gotten accepted at the University of Alabama. She was able to get an apartment. She was living on her own. And so it's just me and husband number two. And so what I knew I needed to get out. One of the things that I mentioned when I first started sharing was that this is a fellowship and a family. When I got ready to move, that clubhouse that I had been a part of knew that I was going to move. The Saturday after Thanksgiving, with no forewarning to this man that I was going to leave, he was sitting at the table having breakfast, and I said, I am leaving. And when I opened the door to the side door to the house, there were a line of cars in front of my house. One of my neighbors thought that someone had died. There were so many cars lined up. And those people came in. They were members of Al-Anon. They were members of AA first and Al-Anon, and they helped me move. The person that I had been married to, my first husband, had never paid child support. I thought, you know, that was the whole point. My kids are going to be taken care of, but the component of that is that they are willing. I had seen this first husband at a funeral for his aunt, who was also my kid's aunt. And when I was leaving the house, this first husband, the Vietnam vet, comes up to me and he says, I have been sober for 2 years. I am sorry for what happened. Before the end of the week, he called me and he says, I want to pay you back the child support that I owe you. So I made arrangements with the child support office, which was part of our office. He was able to pay back that money in a lump sum. From 6 months after he paid that money back,
That man had a heart attack on his job and died. I had enough Al-Anon to be able to say, I was part of that, and I forgive you. The one thing that I never thought would happen, my kids went to that man's funeral. My kids were able to be there and pay their respects to somebody that they probably did not remember in a very good light. But I also had the money that I needed to move. I was able to make a deposit on a place to stay, and I left the situation that I was in. I will also tell you that I did not have a sponsor. I was not working the steps. And the young man that helped orchestrate my move became husband number three. Now, I figured, okay, maybe I need to get out of active alcoholism. So maybe the program has got something for me. This was not a good situation. You know, it probably looked like something that I was hurting. I did not heal. I did not use the tools of this program to help Wanda. And so this is what happens. That even in recovery, even having access to a program of recovery and working a program of recovery are two different things. I can get just as drunk as any alcoholic on my feelings, on the things that I don't want to face about Wanda. 2 years into this thing, this young man looks at me and he says, you know what? He calls me at work. He says, you need to get your stuff and leave. And so I moved out. One of the things that I'm very grateful to this young man for was he was friends with a couple that were in AA, and this lady went to Al-Anon. Susie was coming to our Al-Anon meetings, and she and I would talk. I said, Susie, I need a sponsor. Susie became my sponsor. And she took me through the steps, and I worked my fourth step out of the big book because this is the way she wanted me to do it. And I gotta admit, it worked for me. I did columns, I did writing. Susie came over to my house. I had a little apartment, and she came over at probably 8 o'clock, and we were gonna do my fifth step. She left at 1 o'clock in the morning. I told Andrew, have me some tissues. I had a box of tissues there. I'm Catholic. I've gone to confession my whole life. I never had a confession like that. I cannot be grateful enough for how the steps can help us. And I was beginning to heal. But wait. Oh, well, let me see. I retired from my job and I moved to Pensacola, Florida. And prior to my moving, now I've been single for 4 years now, I had met this guy at the AA convention in Birmingham. He was part of a men's group, and Philip Waters, who was also in that group, knew this guy. And so Philip, you know, Wayne and I got to talking, and you know, but I thought I gotta keep doing what I need to do, so I moved to Pensacola. And the recovery was just what I needed to steep myself in. I got a sponsor down there, and I'm really beginning to feel what this program has for me. It reminded me so many times that I didn't cause it. It reminded me that I can't control it and I can't cure it. And my brother, who had gotten me into the program, his wife died of cancer, and so he was struggling. And so I could be with my brother in Pensacola.
and not focus on him and enjoy the good things that he had to offer. My brother had moved from Detroit because he and his wife needed to change their places, their playmates, and their playthings, and so they had moved to Pensacola. And this was the closest I'd had family. Every time I needed to visit family, I was driving to Michigan. So I actually had family that was within a five-hour drive. And so I liked it down there, and I had met people there going to Sumatanga and going to the conventions and roundups. So I had, when I came to Pensacola the first time, I had a meeting before I had a place to live and before I had a job, because I wanted to work even though I had retired from the job in criminal prosecution. This guy and I decided we were going to talk back and forth, and I moved again. You talk about moving. I mean, insanity, you know. I thought, well, maybe we're going to see if we can get married. So I moved up to North Alabama. He had bought a log cabin, and he was living in Gunnersville. And so I moved to North Alabama. Some things happened that told me that this might not be the best situation for me. I turned around and moved back to Pensacola. I had been in Pensacola for 3 years, and he decided that he was gonna ask me if I would come back. And I said, well, you know, the first time I moved, I did it. This time, if you want me, you need to come and get me. So he got the U-Haul, he came to Pensacola, and we moved back. And I moved back to Pensacola, and we got married. There are, even though I've mentioned the three C's, one of the tools of Al-Anon that helps me recognize what's going on with me are those acronyms. And we have what's called there's supposed to be four M's. It's martyrdom, managing, manipulating, and mothering. I've added a fifth M, and it's called minimizing. Because what I can do is say it's okay. What I can say is it's not so bad. This person that I was married to now was going through some very, very, very difficult times. Once again, I am with someone who is having some difficult relations with his family. And what I'm beginning to see is that I have great mothering tendencies. I've been able to repair my relationship with my children, which because of the way I was, we had a relationship, but it was not the best. I have been able to repair my relationship with my children, but I'm still mothering grown people. And so I think I was filling a void for someone. In the last 3 years, and because this is my story, and I've thought a lot about sharing this when Scott asked me to share, because it's so fresh. It's like that scab that I'm gonna have to pick at for just a minute, because this all happened within the last few months. But what I was beginning to see was that I was in a recovery program, and he had decided that he didn't need to. And when people share about coming into AA and coming into recovery, and they get married, and everybody's happy, joyous, and free, and they're living in the sunlight of the Spirit, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. But that doesn't always happen, because for Al-Anon, we get to be selfish. We get to take care of ourselves first. Now I've come to acceptance. And when I came to acceptance, I came to surrender. And the God of my understanding, I said, I'm giving this to you. I don't know what I can do with it, but I'm giving it to you. I had thought that it might be a good idea for me to extricate myself from this, but I didn't know how. And I came in from exercise on a Wednesday in August, and this person had been wrestling with some of the prevalent ideas that are going on now. And he looked at me and he said, you need to accept the things that I'm believing in. You need to accept the people that I'm supporting.
you need to do this, and if you can't, you need to let me know what you're going to do by the end of the day. And because I have a God of my understanding now, every morning for the last, gosh, Andrew, probably 10 years, I get up and I have coffee with God. That's the nice thing about being retired now. Even when I was retired before and I was working part-time in Pensacola, but I made coffee with God the most important part of my day. And so I have a relationship with God now that I can talk things over. I love where our Al-Anon says, talk things over, reason things out with someone else. My someone else is God. I'm also grateful that I have a program that says we understand as perhaps few others can. Because when I come to my meetings and I'm listening to the honest sharing of the Al-Anons that are sitting at that table in Gunnersville, Alabama, I'm hearing Wanda's story and I can relate it to what's going on in my life. And so I went back upstairs. We were living in a 600 square foot log cabin and there was a loft bedroom, and I went back upstairs and I said, you know, I think you're right. I says, I think I need to do something that's going to be good for me, and I'm going to leave. In the course of my making that statement, oh, I got to share this because I thought this was so cool when I read this. And it says, let me see, where is this? Oh, I couldn't change the actions or choices of other people. I can take the action to let go and let God. Also, there were steps I could take to change my own life. When I was ready, the opportunities began to appear. I believe when God helps us see the right path, he sticks around to lead the way. And God showed up. I needed to get a U-Haul. And the young lady that had asked me to sponsor her said, what can I call? From the time that I made that statement, I walked out of that house and spent the night with a friend, and that was the last night that I ever spent in that house. I called, my sponsee said, what can I do to help? I said, I need a U-Haul, and I can't find one except to drive up to Huntsville. She got on the computer. Two guys, two trucks showed up. The little bit of stuff that was in the house was gone by, was out of the house by Friday. That was Wednesday. Friday, everything's out of the house. She calls me. She says, Wanda, I got on the computer. I found you a U-Haul, and it's about 3 miles from where you're staying at your friend's house. The U-Haul shows up. Saturday morning, one of the guys with the trucks couldn't show up. I'm sitting there at my friend's little house, and I'm having coffee with God, and I said, okay, God, have you got a plan B? He said, yeah, Blanche. I said, Blanche? I said, yeah, that's a B. He said, Wanda, call Blanche and get her and her husband and they'll come help you. I called Blanche. She says, yeah, Tony and I will be right there. People who had no idea what was going on, and I was able. I called one of my friends in Pensacola. I asked my daughter, I said, I'm going to leave Wayne. What should I do? She said, Mom, go to Pensacola. I'd much rather come visit you at the beach. She was living in Birmingham then, so anyway, so I called my brother. I said, I'm coming back to Pensacola. He says, what do you want me to do? I said, meet me in Montgomery and finish driving the U-Haul. My daughter got me to Montgomery. My brother got me from Montgomery to Pensacola. Al-Anon shows up. I call my friend. I says, I'm leaving. My friend Dora knew that I was having some problems because when I would go and visit her, Dora and I would talk. Dora had been married to Mr. Bill for a long time. She understood alcoholism. She knows how our brains work. She says, you come and stay with me until you find a place to stay. God showed up. So I wasn't sure I was going to be able to make this because I knew how I thought I was still grieving, but I think what we do in Al-Anon is we grieve our losses, but the loss is the relationship. We have already let go of the people, But we have to grieve that relationship that I thought was going to be a part of who I was. And my surrender says I can just give this to God, and I don't have to worry about it. I used to think that the world revolved around me. Now I'm just a part. I am just a part of this world. You know, when you think about it, though, it's like if I can do everything to keep everybody going, what I do is I want Wanda to look good, but I need to fix this, I need to fix this, I need to fix this. I need to keep, if I can keep all this in order. They had the convention that Maria spoke at? There was a convention in January in Huntsville. And the Al-Anon speaker at that convention is a young lady from California named Maria. Pensacola had done a convention when I was living in Pensacola the first time, and I was a part of that convention, and I met this young lady named Maria. My son had moved out to Los Angeles, California. My son had developed kidney disease through no fault of his own. I remember my son, when the doctor said that his kidneys were going into failure, he looked at me and he said, "You know, Mom, this means I can't drink." He knew his dad was an alcoholic. And my son said, "I can't drink." But he had an opportunity to get a transplant. I knew he was going to come up for an evaluation. I do not know this young lady. I've never seen her before other than to hear her Al-Anon talk. And I go up to Maria and I said, "My son lives in Los Angeles." I said, if he has a transplant or he goes for an evaluation, would you mind if I call you?" She says, "Wanda, you call me. I'll come pick you up. I'll take care of you so you can take care of him." 2 months after this, I get a phone call from my son. He says, "Mom, I'm up for an evaluation at Cedars-Sinai so that they can try to give me a transplant." I called Maria, and I told her that I had a flight. I'd been to California once before that. Maria comes barreling up to LAX in this white BMW. And I'm just getting off the plane from Alabama. She comes and picks me up. I do not know this. I've never met her before, but we are an Al-Anon family group. I'd never met this young lady before. She takes me to her house. She puts me up. I get to go and see my son. I get to go to Cedars when he has an evaluation. She takes me to a meeting. The meetings out there were 100 people deep. They do a countdown. You go into a group and you do 25 to sharing. I think the meetings last a little bit longer than an hour, but what's the point? It's recovery. And I got to go to a meeting in California. And Maria came back to Huntsville and was their speaker. And it was the same weekend as the Al-Anon convention. I said, "No, I have to come see my friend." She was there for me. And there were not that many Al-Anons there that weekend, but I was there. I wanted to see her and support her because she had been there for me. I have one other thing that I would like to share. I'm in a better place now. I'm among family. Like I said before, our program says hope and healing in Al-Anon, and we only get this through working our steps. You know that I have a better relationship with the God of my understanding, and our 12th step says I get to carry the message. But one of the things that I look at is Wanda, and I think, man, even after 25 years in Al-Anon, you've still had some crazy stuff. But it's not because I'm an Al-Anon, it's because I'm human. But I have a way to work what those parts of me that need working on, I get to work on them now with the help of my steps, with the help of meetings, conference-approved literature, and the friends and family that I have met in here. On February the 23rd, there's a reading in our Courage to Change. And it says, "Even as a child, I had grown up responsibilities. So it is no wonder that I grew up to be a caretaker. It seemed so comfortable, so automatic to think of others first and to give myself completely to whatever crisis was at hand without a thought for myself.
When I became aware that this was not one of my most admirable traits, but was instead a form of self-destructiveness, I was horrified. I set out to wipe all such behavior and attitudes. I was determined to become self-involved and uncaring as possible. Fortunately, I failed to make such a radical change. Today, years later, I'm still a caretaker, and I probably always will be. But now I consider it a valued characteristic, a gift of my upbringing that can greatly enhance my life if I don't carry it to extreme. Although I no longer do things for others that they could do for themselves, I still try to be nurturing to them as well as to myself. Al-Anon helps me to find some balance. And the reminder says, today I will try not to condemn parts of myself while accepting other parts. I am a composite, and I love myself best when I embrace all that I am. And this quote is from Mahatma Gandhi, and it says, my imperfections and failures are as much a blessing from God as my successes and my talents, and I lay them both at his feet.